Welcome to the Gooder Podcast, where we talk with powerhouse women in CPG about their journeys to success. This episode is sponsored by Retail Voodoo, a brand development firm guiding mission-driven consumer brands to attract new and passionate consumer base, crush their categories through growth and innovation, and magnify their social and environmental impact. If your brand is in need of brand positioning, package design, or marketing activation, we are here to help. You can find more information at www.retail-voodoo.com. Hi, welcome to the Gooder Podcast. I'm your host, Diana Frike. Today, we get to talk with the powerhouse women in, today it will be in wellness, but food, beverage, and wellness here on the Gooder Podcast and their journeys to success and their insights on the industry. Thanks for joining us today. Really quick, this episode is brought to you by Retail Voodoo, a brand development firm. Our clients include Starbucks, Kind, REI, PepsiCo, Hi-Ke, and many other market leaders. We provide strategic brand and design services for leading brands in the food, beverage, wellness, and fitness industry. If your goal is to increase market share, drive growth, or disrupt the marketplace with new and innovative ideas, give us a call. Let's talk. You want to find out more about what we do? You can visit retail-voodoo.com or drop me an email at info@retail-voodoo.com. Now, today we get to meet Miss Erica Lepchek. And I think I got that right this time. Yeah.
You did.
Yes. Excellent. Woohoo. We're related by crazy last names. And strangely, I'm going to say through a marriage, her husband has some Czech heritage. My family has Czech heritage. So we're just going to say we're cousins. Yeah. Today for the day.
Yeah, we're like far removed, but we're cousins.
Erica is the CEO and co-founder of Memory, spelled M-E-M-O-R-E. I want to make sure that you guys get that. A direct-to-consumer brand dedicated to raising awareness of the preventative measures people can take to sustain long-term cognitive health and reverse the trends of Alzheimer's instances. As CEO and co-founder of Memory, Erica aims to break the common misconception that Alzheimer's is hereditary. And we'll get to talk a little bit more about that soon. Mm-hmm. So welcome, Miss Erica. How are you?
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here. It's Friday. Feeling good.
Friday. Feeling good. Where are you calling from today?
I live in Charlotte, North Carolina.
North Carolina. Yes.
I'm a Midwesterner.
Are you?
Is
it that much different?
You know, people are a lot nicer. I think because I moved here from Chicago.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It's just totally different worlds. And people say y'all and they do a lot of different things.
Way more stuff, Southern.
But, yeah, we love it.
That's so funny. While Chicago is in the Midwest, I always kind of give it its very own personality because maybe I've just watched too much television or movies or fascinated with the mob or whatever, but Chicago's got its own vibe and the public art and the amazing food. And it's got a bit of Midwest personality
like
to
on
it.
The water. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know.
It's a special place.
Mm-hmm. It is. We were there almost 8 years and it was just time to move on. We spent our 20s and early 30s there. So
Time for something
good
new.
Good place to visit. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, before we get too far into it, why don't you tell us a little bit about Memory? And I always like to let everybody start with where they are and what they're doing. Tell us about Memory and why it exists.
Okay. Happy to. So Memory started in 2019, pre-pandemic, and we launched this year, May of 2021. And launching Memory was like a little out of character for me, to be honest. I have a competitive spirit and I've always been highly motivated by my career, but I would never describe myself as being entrepreneurial at all. That's more like my husband's dream. I'm like the realist. He's the dreamer in our relationship. Yeah. But the turning point for me was learning that less than 2% of all dementia cases basically were attributed to hereditary factors. And as someone with family history of dementia on both sides, my mother and my father's side, this was a huge revelation for me. Mm. And I had always considered my predisposition to the disease pretty unnerving, probably and largely because it fell out of my control and I'm very type A. And so I just, you know, when I read that, it was like, there's things that I can do to prevent health onset or disease onset rather. And this statistic basically proved everything wrong, in my opinion. I had always assumed that Alzheimer's dementia like was hereditary. And I don't know why. I feel like it's just a conversation that people, it just comes in passing, like, oh yeah, my mother had that or my grandmother, like someone is always stemmed to someone they know that like basically onset this horrible and awful disease. So the fact that I could prevent it and gave me that power, I began prioritizing preventative health and sought solutions to support my journey there. And I'm a busy mom. I work full time. I do this as well. And what I found in the marketplace was a cognitive health market, like pretty oversaturated with products touting quick fixes and like miracle results. You know, like focus, get clarity and focus, or get the energy boost you need, you know, but it was all short term. And preventative health was an afterthought. And I just became determined to change that. And so we launched Memory to help put long-term health front and center and kind of switch the narrative and utilize nutrition for prevention. And yeah, I mean, that's the 1,000-foot view, but that's how it came about.
What I kind of like, was there a real moment? Was there something that happened, or is this, are you like a lot of moms where you have a lot of cray cray going on up here that you're constantly cycling through because you have kids? Usually for me, it's usually kid related. What am I worried about? What am I, you know?
Oh my God. There's that TikTok. I don't know if you've seen it.
Like, no.
It's so funny. It's like, aren't you worried? And he's like, about what? And it's like, it's basically your anxiety speaking to yourself. And he's like, aren't you worried? And like, about what? It's just like, oh, yeah, I am. Because it's always that way. Like when, when things feel like good or even or just like balanced, I'm always like, something can't be right. What am I missing? What am I missing? But I've been really trying to live more in the moment and take that like outside of my brain thought and just be like, actually can be okay to be okay. Like, you know, so.
Oh, I love that. Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, back to your question. Like I'm always thinking about simplicity and I have this thing like in my role with my team, I'm like, I want to do things with intention. I don't want to do things for busy work or to fill time. Like if someone asks you to just do something, please ask them why or what the purpose or intent is. We have no problem doing it, but I just want to know what it's going to lead to. Like that's just how my brain thinks. And like I said, I'm pretty type A, and I don't think I've always been type A either. I think that's something that's kind of come on after college, like getting into my career and being like, oh crap, I got to like organize my life and like figure out how I'm going to be a sane human being in my adult life. And so when I found out that less than 2% of this disease is actually hereditary and it can be prevented through lifestyle and diet, I like took that by the reins and just ran with it.
And it's got to be related to media, because I want to say that most of my information about Alzheimer's has come from the media. And if there's, you know, you always have to go, well, who benefits from there being Alzheimer's? Is there an industry that benefits from Alzheimer's patients? And why isn't that component? It's kind of like, have you ever heard the, I don't know if you've heard this. There used to be a television show called Adam Ruins Everything. Have you heard of it?
No.
Oh my gosh.
I kind of like the title.
I'll have to send you a link to it. Okay. In it, he debunks a lot of myths, like myths about all sorts of things. And one of the episodes is debunking the myth of women's infertility rate after the age of 35. And he talks about where the research comes from. It's like about 100-year-old research that says that women women's infertility rate goes up by 100% at the age of 35. Well, the original percentage of infertility is 0.5%. So it goes from a 0.5% infertility rate to a 1% to 1%. And when you go, okay, well, when you say it that way, you know, but there's this whole industry that relies on people having babies. And so they have to create, so there has to be a way to talk about it so that it drives a growth rate sooner than later. Yeah. And so I kind of wonder, like, where is, who's, is somebody benefiting from Alzheimer's patients? I know that sounds really weird and dark. I don't want to really go down that way, but isn't that weird?
It is dark. And it is a bit like morbid in a way of like, and I don't mean to laugh, but I do believe it's our healthcare. We're really, we think, I guess like a treat first mentality, right? Mm-hmm. Rather than prevention.
Yeah.
And like the cost of care for an Alzheimer's patient or just care in general is in the trillions. And so, I mean, I don't know if they're directly capitalizing or benefiting, but it is something that, you know, the narrative is just not widely pronounced. Like, and I think it's becoming more prominent with the Mediterranean diet, the Mind diet, the Blue Zones diet. These long, these longevity diets that are becoming more mainstream. And obviously it's not totally wide and open. You have to be searching and be like, into the weeds on some of these things to even know what those are, right? Because what's really mainstream is keto and like all of the quick fix diets, because those are more sexy because you get like changes pretty fast. I mean, I think it is just like diet culture as well as healthcare. And it's sad because there's so many organizations that are fighting for change within Alzheimer's. And there's actually a lot of celebrities and women against Alzheimer's. Like there's so many different organizations that try to spread this word, but it's like almost closed kind of, in my opinion.
And then I want to further that when we, you and I were talking about this in general, we were talking about, well, what could memory be in the future? We talked about like, well, maybe it could be more than just a supplement, more than just a diet. Maybe it could be, because I've also heard of other things like make sure that you keep learning your whole life or make sure you blah, blah, blah. Like there are other elements that keep dementia and Alzheimer's at bay or eradicate it, for lack of you know, better term. So I'm sure that you're still, I mean, you're 2 years in, you probably have a ton of information, but there's probably way more in there as well.
I just want to add to that, because there is like these facts and there's actually communities where it's kind of like a mini blue zone, I guess you can say, within the United States. There's one that's pretty prominent in Florida, actually, and it's a community where there's multi-generational social communication happening, as well as diet and lifestyle influences. And one of the biggest benchmarks was like having, unfortunately, COVID has set us back a bit. Having those social relationships, especially multi-generational, with infants and babies and children, as an aging mind or an older adult, it actually helps you like stay more present, and the neurons in your brain become more stimulated. And so it actually has been studied that like having multi-generational social interactions is also, and it's part of the blue zones as well. But yeah, there's just so much. That's the whole point of this product, and like the whole point of our organization and company is we just want to educate and like just shed light on like easy things that you can actually do or concentrate a bit more on that you don't really, you know, think about day to day, but like be more aware of. So to sustain where you're at.
Well, let's go back before memory. I kind of would love to get your narrative on like, how did you, what was your path to, how were you successful before memory, and how did that then allow memory to happen? Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I don't know if I was successful before memory, but I graduated college. I went to Michigan State University, graduated in 2008. And that was a difficult year for any grad, yeah, and just in general.
Yeah.
And I went to school for retailing, which is very niche and very specific. But I'm like customer obsessed. And I've always been that way because I've been working since I was 14, 15 years old. So I could get a Grand Am Pontiac car.
Oh, yes.
Grand Am. Yeah. And so I just knew like the customer was always right in my mind. And I wanted to understand like how you can influence their buying behaviors. And like, I love the retail math behind the whole buying process. So anyways, I went to school for that. When I graduated, I wanted to move to New York and I wanted to like be a buyer, right? Like that's just the dream.
Sure.
And it was a lot harder than you realize. And so I can't remember if I sought them out or if they sought me out through like a job affiliation with Michigan State, but Sears Holdings was hiring.
Okay.
And Sears Holdings, you know, everyone worked for Sears back in, not in 2008, but prior.
Yeah.
It was like the United States lifeline,
yeah,
to retail. And so the CEO, Eddie Lampert, was heading up kind of like a subdivision or category within the organization called e-commerce.
Yes.
And my Gopher was like his special project, which I really think about is kind of the Instacart of today.
Yeah.
And so I got hired as a e-commerce merchandiser,
okay,
to work on that special project. And so since 2008, I've really purposely moved throughout my career to, I guess, get as much information in my brain on e-commerce and the industry, because I just knew, okay, this is the future of retail. Like no one's buying from catalogs anymore. Everyone's going to be buying on online. And so I learned a lot. It was a lot of self-taught because I didn't go to school for that. You know, there was no like e-commerce KPIs being studied in school. So yeah. So then fast forward to 2019, I was in e-commerce from 2008 to 2019. And I'm still in e-commerce, obviously. We are a direct-to-consumer website, but I also had an e-commerce division at a company that produces and manufactures like home appliances and things. And so what was I saying? Oh, so that was my success, quote unquote, leading up to here, was just having that competitive understanding and intel of like how to operate a direct to consumer business.
Yeah.
As well as how to influence marketing levers to convert, you know, consumers. So my husband, thankfully, quit his full-time job and kind of went all in my dream, and became, I guess he's full-time memory. He's CEO / COO, whatever title, you know, founding member, whatever, all of them right now, him and I and some other people. But so that's kind of the long story short of how it started. And then it just kind of has snowballed into, well, we got affiliated with the NC State Food Innovation Lab.
All right.
Yeah, they're in Kannapolis, North Carolina. And we went there and pitched our idea, and they helped us run the first production and all the manufacturing and utilize their equipment. And they acted as our accelerator a bit. And now we're seeking out co-packers, and you know, it's just kind of snowballed from there, but they helped us we utilized all of their data scientists, all of their intel and understanding of sourcing products and ingredients and the, you know, education behind these diets that we were trying to complement with our products. So, everything's kind of fallen into a weird place, but this is where we are, and we're just running with it.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I have such a weird small world story for you now.
Oh, I can't wait to hear it. I love these.
My business partner, David, Retail Voodoo, right?
Yeah.
Prior to Retail Voodoo, it was called Lemley Design. We just rebranded in 2011. Okay. But in 2006 and seven, We worked with Sears C-Suite directly with Eddie Lampert
on
brand positioning. And we were talking about the business units. And I have a feeling that that program that you worked on was a articulation of part of the direction that we gave the Sears organization.
Oh, that is wild.
That weird?
Yes, that's wild. So my gopher was basically like Kmart.com and Sears.com had their own platforms.
Yep.
And they sold different products and different target markets, et cetera.
Yes.
But it was one and the same. And it was like home delivery as well as organizational delivery. And we, you know, sourced from Whole Foods and we sourced from any retailer where it was like the convenience of the one day delivery or based on your geolocation. And so it was like this brilliant idea, but like just couldn't scale to where we needed it to be.
The technology wasn't there yet.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And now it is, you know, so, I mean, in retrospect, everything landed where it should have, but that's what the thing was. I was just benchmarking all of the, who did it best out there. And at the time it was Amazon. And so I self-taught myself Amazon platform. And at the time it was more about SKU count than it was about revenue and profitability. Yeah. It's changed crazy, being where retail is now, but.
Yeah.
That is such a small world.
Yeah. I think you're not giving yourself enough credit in regards to success. Like, you know, in 2008, for you to be able to self-teach yourself, especially if you didn't come from an IT background, like that was a very small and narrow skill set, and that you were able to translate technology and turn it into, like, that's a big deal. Like now it doesn't feel like it because there's a bunch of tools in place, but you know, let's put a little gold star sticker up there, right, Erica, Yes. There's no way you'd be doing what you did now if you didn't, first of all, know how to work hard and had you not gone through that process.
Very true. I've always grinded and I think that's when my type A personality started coming out is I'm now a self-proclaimed recovering perfectionist because when you get into that headspace of just wanting to succeed and do well and learn and be the best at your role or what have you, or be that knowledge expert. And that was always my goal. Mm-hmm. You do become kind of warped into this perfectionism.
Yes.
Like, I don't know. I never set my standard or like a ceiling of it, but it was like, it became too much where I would just obsess. And so now that I'm like in my mid-30s, I'm much more aware and also I think just smarter about where I delegate my time and I can anticipate things a little bit better and read the field. I used to spend so much time like anticipating a question from like a C-level exec and like putting decks together and just so I was ready, you know, and now I'm like, I know this. I don't need to put together a deck. Like I'll be able to fly. So
it's exhausting.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And so you get to a breaking point, I guess you could say. And so I've done therapy, a lot of, what is it called? Hypnotherapy, which is
really
cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like your subconscious kind of getting back into that and just a lot of different tactics of mindfulness to actually be present and not so freaked out about like the unknown and like worrying gets you nowhere type of thing. So it's been a journey as we all are on, you know.
Right. Well, tell me, and this, I'm going to leave this open because this could be in a couple of ways that when did you know you were headed the right way from a career path or with memory? Like you could answer it either way. When did you know, like you started finding your groove, you loved waking up every morning or you were just excited to get down into the weeds on something? Do you have that like moment?
Point. Yeah. Yeah, I do. And I think I was always reaching for it because like I said, I've worked with teams or just worked in general since a young age, but I've always been pretty competitive from an athletic stance to like I played competitive soccer and I figure skated and I was always either within a team or I just liked being a part of a network or a community or group or whatever. And I was always just this tactical doer, right? For so long, like just exporting, like everyone would tell me what to do and I would just do it.
Yeah.
And then I got to a certain point in my career where I was like building teams myself and they were looking to me for, you know, recognition. They were looking to me for praise. They were looking to me for guidance, to mentor. And I was like, oh my God, this is where I'm supposed to be. This is what I want to do. And being that pioneer in the e-commerce industry to a sense, I was almost considered that industry expert, you know, depending on which organization I was with. And that is what drove me to constantly be learning, constantly shape and mold and shift, but also to show up for my team and the people that were looking to me to guide. And so, yeah, I think it was like when I became a manager or like a people manager. That was, and then I became a director and now I'm a head of a department. Like, and now I, you know, have a company that hopefully will grow to be a team of plethora of people who will want to do good, you know, for the, our mission and purpose. So
yeah,
I think it's all combined into that. It's like, I'm a mother now too. And I think a lot of that is, I just want to do well by people. And so yeah, I think it's just like the teamwork and like that aspiration. Plus I want to know that people are happy in what they're doing and they're getting out of bed. Cause I've been on the other side of it too, you know? And so, making sure that capitalizing on what they do well and, you know, making sure that they're happy doing it or giving them resources to learn more and reach more. Yeah. So that's been the turning point for me in my career where I got to that point where I could actually control that. That was when I was like, okay, I'm in the right place.
Yeah. Good. And I even think this whole concept of people manager, I might even look at it as more of a community builder, even though you're doing it in a business, because what I see with memory and some of the conversations that in that conversation that we had beforehand, this campaign is less about, or this project or this brand is less about, here's a product. It's like you are wanting to have impact on a community. And so
100%.
That, see you as more a community builder more than a people manager per se.
That's the ultimate goal. Like that would be my, if that was the role I took in the organization, I took a step back from like driving, you know, research and development R&D, and like, you know, that I, that's what I would want to do because that's where I find like fulfillment, you know? And then, you know, when talking about the, this product, it's so personal to me. And I know a lot of people could also resonate with that or take that and be like, wow, I relate to that, you know, or that I have Alzheimer's dementia in my family. And I thought this was going to be my demise and this is how I was going to go in the world, but actually can take the reins of my life and change it. Like that's empowering, you know?
Yeah. Love it.
Yeah.
Do you have any, I call them ahas or uh-oh moments where it was learning either way, like it was a good thing or a bad thing. And you walked away and you're like, okay, maybe I shouldn't do this or something that you can share. Maybe it's in the development of memory, even like any moment where you're like, oh, I probably shouldn't over-order this, or I don't even know what that could be.
Well, yeah, I think that's, I mean, you're never... The whole term entrepreneur, unless you are a serial entrepreneur, is like starting from grassroots, right? Or teaching yourself, pioneering. And we didn't know what we were doing. Like we didn't go to school for entrepreneurship, which thankfully there are so many universities that have that because I think it's amazing. But like, if anything, I leaned on my husband as much as I could because he's kind of just thinks that way. And he like, I don't know, he reads a lot. He knows business very well, whereas I'm more of like conceptualizing, and I know how to get like consumers engaged maybe, or like what the purpose or mission or how sexy a product should look or taste. So yeah, I mean, there's been so many aha moments and more uh-oh moments than aha, right? Like every day we're like, are we doing the right thing? Like, is this smart? Or should we be doing this? And then there's a couple of days in the week where we had a productive meeting or we built a good relationship with like a registered dietitian that believes in our product and we get psyched again. But we went down a path or are going down a path where it's not like so mainstream is like this mentality of long-term rather than quick fix. And I think we continue to focus on treatment rather than like once we're diagnosed rather than focusing on providing quick relief of the symptoms and blah, blah, blah. But so that's going to be hard. And like we've pivoted so many times, like, should we focus on the short-term complements of that? Because there's actually a lot that come from it. I mean, when you eat whole foods, you're regular, you're clearer, you know, in your mind, you wake up with more energy. You don't have your 3 p.m. coffee need or caffeine fix. Like there are things that happen, but we're not marketing our product to be like, focus now, lose fat now, like whatever. So we've pivoted so many times and had so many uh-ohs or disapprehensions on the direction. And at the same time, when we were set to go to market, COVID hit like hard. And our lab closed and we couldn't, we ordered all our product. What do you mean the lab's closed? Like we can't produce, you know? Because we utilized all their expert machinery and things. We weren't about to like pivot and find a new place during that time. So we had to postpone and we actually formulated the product and the taste in our guest bedroom.
Oh my goodness.
And Brad set up this like mini lab on my work desk at the time. And we had scales and weights and all these different ingredients. We had like four different varieties of blueberries to taste. And he was just like a chemist and a scientist. Like he was the one formulating and I was the person again saying, this is good, or this is actually too much of this or blah, blah, blah. And so, yeah, I think we've just had to figure it out as we've gone. And I think we've also, budgeting is another aha or uh-oh. I guess they're one and the same when you're an entrepreneur, is like, we want to do it all. Right. Yeah. And that's just like us because we know the possibility as human beings, we know what we can reach for, but making sure you're pulling the right levers at the right time is really hard to anticipate. And so, we focused a ton on packaging and product, how it's pronounced, you know, rather on like in the digital sense. So we built out a really nice website. We spent a lot of, you know, crowdsourcing and benchmarking on packaging, like just getting really in the nitty gritty of the things that mattered and then pipelining or at least tabling the things that do matter, but we just can't like either fund it at this point in time or we can't bandwidth. So that was another aha is like, did we spend too much money on packaging? Should we have scaled back and put more on marketing? I mean, we're just constantly failing and learning from it, to be honest. And that's my biggest thing. Like even in my career, it's like, I'm not afraid to fail fast, but it's gotta be a fast fail. You know,
it's
like,
gotta be really fast fail.
Like let's not dwell on it.
Let's not hemorrhage.
Exactly. So and I'm a lot better at that than my husband. He takes failure a lot harder than I do. I'm like, yeah, that sucks, but let's pivot and let's go. You know, and he's more like, oh, I can't believe you went that did that. And I so we compliment each other really well.
That's awesome. That's so great. Do you have a moment so far where you're like, where you like something that you have a gold star on that you're pretty proud of right now? Is it just the, are you just excited about the launch or is there something else that you're like, this is the thing that I'm most proud of right now? And it could be again about this brand or could be anywhere in your journey.
Yeah. I mean, is it so selfish to say I'm proud of myself for like just showing up every day? I mean,
no.
I mean,
not at all.
Yeah. There are so many tiny things that I'm proud of. Like, oh, we got the recognition from this great registered dietitian who believes in our product. And that just makes me so proud that she believes in our product, our mission, and she's going to partner with us, like those types of things. But at the end of the day, I have two children, 3 and 5 years old, almost three, almost five. I'm 8 months pregnant right now. I have a full-time job that I dedicate Monday through Friday, 40, 50 hours a week. You know, that's my passion, and that's where I have to bring in money to fund our household. And then on the side, evenings and weekends, my husband and I are, well, he's always building memory, but I'm doing memory. And so I'm strapped to the max, you know, like when people are like, oh, I don't have time to do anything. I legitimately don't have time to do anything. And I have a lot of guilt there. Like I could be a better mother. I could be a better, you know, founder. I could be a better wife, friends. Like I'm that person that doesn't look at my personal phone for a long time. And then I'll respond to everyone in mass dash. So yeah, I think I'm just really proud of myself. And that sounds so selfish, like, because I'm proud of a lot of things that we've accomplished, but I'm really just trying to appreciate myself more. And I know that sounds, I could get emotional about it, but I mean, you even said it at the beginning, I kind of throw shade at myself a lot, like just because I don't know what it is. It's like maybe just social cues or culture, like of being a successful woman sometimes, like I don't just own it. And so I'm trying to own it, and I'm trying to be proud of myself and preach to my friends and my family, like I got on a podcast. Like, how cool is that?
Or how cool is that?
Yeah. So like, you know, I'm trying to share life's good moments instead of always just harping on some of the negative and hard times too. So
a lot of that is upbringing. Like I have a lot of that myself. My parents were immigrants, and so I'm first generation, and part of being first generation is you are reminded every single day you are in that household of what they gave up in order for you to be here, and you better appreciate it. Yeah. So I get it. Like, you know, I'm in school getting my MBA. I have two children. I work full time. It's my business partner running my own company. I am like my work week is 80 hours a week, if not more. And there's this pressure, and then a group of people who think I'm absolutely insane. Don't you want downtime? And downtime for me is nerve-wracking. It creates anxiety for me because as a kid, I was ingrained. There's a, there is a comedian, and I can't remember his name now. He's Italian. He's from Chicago.
Oh, I know exactly. My brother loves him.
Okay. That guy.
My brother loves
Michael Cocciolio or something like that. And he talks about the fact that like his dad was an immigrant when he was a kid and eight. Like his dad was like, when he was 8 years old, is like, how come you don't have a job yet? What's your problem? You should just be down the street, mow some lawns with your kid, you know? So I totally get that. And I don't know if you go from immigrant family, but you know, your family of origin where you grow up sets a lot of this self-talk. A lot of this self-talk.
Mm-hmm. I'm learning that through therapy. It's so interesting. But you know, I'm not from parents of immigrants, but I had my grandparents came in, my father's parents came to the US from Italy. And so they worked really hard, and they actually, my father was raised in a household that didn't have a ton of money. And so when my dad worked when he worked his ass off for us as children, and we got to go on trips and you know, whatever. And then I would come home and be like, well, Sarah got blah, blah, blah from her parents for, and he's like, well, we're not Sarah's parents.
Yes.
And you have a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
So if you want a car, then go to work.
Go to work.
So that's just kind of how I've treated life, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, like if you want something, but you have to kind of manifest it as well in a positive way. And that's also what my father taught me. Yeah. He's like really big on The Secret.
Yeah.
Which is so funny, that book.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so he'll always just text me like randomly and be like, The Secret.
Because
it's easy to like get in a negative headspace. You know, it's so easier to get in a negative headspace than it is to get in a positive. And so Yeah, I think a lot of it does stem from childhood, but I'm glad it's done that for me. You know what I mean?
And I think there is a podcast that went live a few weeks ago. Bree, I forgot your last name, honey. I'm going to send you a link to the book.
Please.
Where she and her husband got to the point where she basically was like you and I, and at one point just killed herself.
Yeah.
Like she'd just gone into overdrive and she started doing retreats. And she wrote a book all about retreats where she goes away for a week. And then when she comes back, then she's back at 180 hours a week, like, or whatever her it is. But she's like, you got to have that time for yourself. I will send you a link to her book so that you can see it. There's a lot of stuff that she writes about in there about this drive,
balance,
the drive and how to find balance. And balance is kind of the wrong word, because really you just got to find a system that works for you to be able to take a break so you can re-energize and then get back to it. Otherwise you just become incrementally less capable depleted.
I know it very well. Well, I would love that. And one of the things that I've really worked on to help me get to that place to take time for myself is actually time blocking.
Yeah.
Self-care.
Time
blocking, like a walk or to go to the gym for an hour. Like,
and I think
I can't take a retreat yet, but I can do an hour, you know? Well,
that is a retreat in and of itself if you are able to own it, that hour. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the reality is that, your life is the way it is. It's, you know, so you got to find out, well, what is my retreat? For me, it's my Saturday morning. I go walking with my girlfriends every Saturday morning. I have 2 hours.
Yeah, I love that.
And that's it. That's my break. And then after I have that, I can go another week.
I think that is like, I don't know, if you're the Energizer Bunny, that's how you recharge, right? To your point, you just find your groove or what makes you happy, because there's a lot of people that like take time for themselves and like grind at a workout class and they're like, oh, that was so hard, I hated it. Well, you don't feel do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't feel like you're getting recharged then. So I have found what works for me, and I am a creature of habit and I do it as much as I can, you know.
Yeah. And I also want to think that taking that downtime and finding whatever that balance of rest is to probably be as important for brain health and cognitive health as
absolutely
as any other part, as part of that holistic component.
Yes. I was just with my sister this past weekend or 2 weekends ago, and she lives in Michigan, and we were talking about how we recharge, like exactly what we were talking about.
Yes.
And I found out recently through self-discovery that I'm an extroverted introvert, meaning I thrive in social situations and love to be social and stimulated, but I actually need to recharge in solitude.
Yes.
And so like it actually drains me when I'm out for a night or I attend an event or a speaker engagement, like what have you. I'll take an hour or two or even a day depending, and I'll actually just like want to be by myself. And I always thought that was weird, but then my sister was like, no, you're the complete opposite of me. Like, I always by myself, but I get recharged by people's energy and being in social situations. So each person has their own like vibe, and you just got to figure it out.
Yeah. I'm going to recommend a book that I'm reading my MBA class right now called Quiet, Q-U-I-E-T. Okay. And it's about the anthropological transformation of an introverted society to an extroverted society, the social constraints that an extroverted society puts on introverts and its relationship to anxiety and the use of anxiety medication. It is
sounds like a Bible.
Blow your mind.
It's going to be life changing for me. I think
it will be.
Thanks for the rec.
Yeah, and it's on audiobooks. So you are
even better. I can take a walk.
There you go.
And get learned.
Sorry, we went way down this rabbit hole. Okay, so what's next for memory? What's on the deck?
So what's next for memory? So we're developing a lot of great partnerships right now, through marketing and as well as just I guess, industry trusted leaders and nutritionists, registered dietitians. And so we're in that right now, the partnership and building the brand that way and that that confidence. And then also we are formulating some new products. And so we're going to come to market hopefully in a bit with some, I don't want to say because it could pivot, but we're coming out with other supplements or powders that are convenient, but also nutritious and also delicious, but more skewed on certain behavioral needs. So not like focus or quick fixes, but still like more greens in your diet or like filling gaps, like by actual nutritional values. So we're focusing on that right now and it's really exciting.
Awesome. What kind of advice would you give people who are considering a startup? I'm just curious, like what would you recommend that they have in place or be ready for?
I would, my advice is like, just do it and tell people about it early and get that adaption. And I think someone had told me like, or I don't know if someone told me or if I listened to it on podcast, but like some people's view of startups is like, keep your ideas close to chest. Which I get. I think Sarah Blakely of Spanx said that, and she did that. But I think it's changed since
I agree.
Spanx launched. Because the more you shapeshift and help people think outside of this box or silo that they might be in, the more adaptive or behind the idea and product, or it could actually even stimulate them to start something for their own self. So just do it. Like just really do it. And people like myself and everyday people start these things all the time with, you know, not a huge finance backing, not a huge, but if it's the right place and time and the right gap in the market, it's going to evolve and, you know, it'll be where it needs to be, when it needs to be. There's that mantra, like, I don't chase, I attract. What was meant for me will simply find me. And I love that because, I mean, hopefully you're not attracting like negative energy, but if, you know, if you have the patience and the bandwidth of your mindset to adapt something like that, then go for it. And then learn, keep learning. Cause that's, you know, you're never too old to stop learning.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Well, our time is almost up, but I'm going to ask a couple of questions that I ask everybody.
Okay.
So, what other women leaders are you, would you like to just kind of elevate? Like, who are you watching? Why are they important to you? Or just, you know, is there a rising star that you're just watching and you just want to elevate who they are?
Yeah. And I don't, my husband will probably get, he's so funny because he's like, why are you trying to, you know, promote competition? But I don't believe, I don't view it like that. Like, when, and I think women supporting other women don't view it that way either. But it's like a shift for men. But there's this woman, her name's Helen Hall, and she lives, I think, in Charleston, South Carolina. So it's like kind of close to me. So like relatable. She started the company Blender Bombs. I don't know if you've heard of it. And so I use them every day. It's a, it's with my memory actually. And Helen Hall is a young entrepreneur who sought a solution for her own self. And some of her clients, I think she was a personal trainer to combat like sugar cravings and blood sugar regulation. And she created this blender bomb, which is a plethora of like nuts and seeds and dates and like all in a ball form, like, and you plop it into your blender and it's a bomb to complement whatever other things that you're putting in your smoothie. So I mix mine with memories sometimes, but I just think she's young. She's really, I don't know if she's really young, but she's young and she's doing it right. I think she's fully funded. Like, I don't think she saw any capital investment, maybe some lines of credit here and there, but I just follow her journey because she's so inspiring probably because it's so relatable to myself. Yep. Like, yep. I created a product or sought out a need for myself, mm-hmm. selfishly, to combat early onset Alzheimer's. But then at the end of the day, it was like, if I need this, the world needs this.
Right.
Like, there's going to be. So she's just very influential to me. And I think she's just got a great positive energy about her. And I just want her to do well. So, yeah, that's I'll awesome. Ride her wave as long as I can.
I love that.
Yeah.
What brands are, well, do you kind of answer this one too? What brands or trends do you have your eye on and why? But so it's almost one and the same. But is there anything yeah. else that you're watching out there?
I think hydration is another thing that's becoming okay. really prominent with that Liquid IV launch yep. a couple of years ago, you know, and it's just like the best name for a product, in my opinion, because it's like, oh, wow, instead of getting hydrated by drinking 10 glasses of water a day, like I actually can supplement my water yeah. with this hydration of electrolytes and vitamin yeah. D and et cetera. Yeah. So I'm a huge fan of Go Hydrate because I just love the flavor and it helps me drink a lot more water. But I do think hydration is going to be something that people need to kind of start realizing how important it is for your mind, your gut health, to drink water and keep your body always hydrated because gotcha. Majority of our own body is made up of water. So yeah, that's a cool trend I think right now that is really taking mainstream.
Mm. Well, we have been talking with Miss Erica Lepchek, the CEO mm-hmm. and co-founder of Memory. Erica, where can people learn more about what you're up to?
Sure. So our Instagram handle is Your Memory, YourMemore. And then our website, our direct to consumer website is Your Memory, YourMemore.com. Mm-hmm. And it kind of talks about, that's the best place to get a lot of information. And then our Instagram, we're always sharing a lot of facts and always credited facts and science backed. So just those two platforms, you know, I think are great. And obviously Facebook, any of the social platforms.
Great. But,
yeah.
Awesome. Erica, thank you so much for your time today. And thank you for what you're doing for our community. I'm really excited to watch you and your brand grow. Thanks for your time today.
That means so much. Thank you. It's been fun.
All right. All right, everybody. We'll catch you next time. Have a great rest of your day.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you haven't already, be sure to click subscribe and share with your network. Until next time, be well and do gooder.